Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan.
With insurancebroker.ie.
On News Talk.
Ask the GP, where we get all of your medical questions, queries issued, answered. Dr. Niall Breen from the Portmarnock GP Clinic is with me in studio today to answer those for you. Niall, how are you doing?
Doing well, thanks.
Yeah, yeah. All good. Yep. 087 1400 106, that's the WhatsApp number if you have a question, I should say, sorry, for Niall this afternoon. Just before we come to listeners' questions, Niall, I just want to ask you about the HPV vaccine, because there's been a lot about it again in the papers over the past week or so. I suppose people really been urged to get it if they're eligible.
Yeah, definitely. So the public health message on this vaccine is really, really consistent. It's safe and it has been proven to prevent cancers by stopping the viruses that cause those cancers, particularly cervical cancer and also some oral cancers as well. So it's usually offered to people in secondary school. A number of years ago, there were attempts made to discredit that vaccine that were absolutely not borne out in all the studies. And it's probably one of the most scrutinised vaccines before the COVID vaccine out there. So the HSE has an absolutely superb amount of advice and resources about it on their website. So I think anybody who's offered that vaccine, and it's usually offered for people's teenage children, I would strongly advocate that they take it up.
Yeah. Do you see much take up through the practice far typically? Or
it's not administered in general practices, so it's administered in schools predominantly. And anecdotally, we hear that the uptake is okay to good. There's been a really, really long journey on this. And Laura Brennan, who actually passed away, I think, from cervical cancer, was a really, really strong advocate for this vaccine. And that was, you know, when she was going through the very last stages of the illness itself, such was the level of her courage. So I couldn't recommend it strongly enough.
Okay. 087 1400 106 if you have a question for Niall today. This listener says, my husband has been put on blood pressure tablets as his blood pressure and pulse rate has been constantly high. He's only on them about a week. Blood pressure is still very high and causing him a level of anxiety. He's 58. He's not overweight. He doesn't smoke. He feels that he might need a higher dose. He's been prescribed about 10 milligrams.
Okay, so blood pressure is obviously really important to get under control, because it can lead to heart attacks and strokes and all the kind of negative things that come with that. I suppose it can take a little bit of time for somebody to settle into the routine of taking a blood pressure medication. And if that person's blood pressure is still high, I presume they're measuring it at home. So very quickly, if you're measuring blood pressure at home, it's important that you do it under a few conditions. So you go to a quiet room, if such a thing exists in your house, by yourself. You take three readings. You discard the first one. You don't cross your legs when you're doing it. You don't do it at a time when you're stressed or under pressure. You write the readings down on, a sheet of paper. Or some people are very organised. They put them in an Excel spreadsheet. And we look at the pattern. So a week is a relatively short time as well. So I'd give it a little bit longer.
Give it longer. Okay.
I would indeed, yeah. And just be mindful of how they're measuring the blood pressure at home as well, because we're happy for people to measure blood pressure at home once they do it under those accepted criteria.
So this listener shouldn't go back to the GP just yet? Give it another...
No, I don't think so. I'd continue to measure at home with the goal being that you're getting your BP under 140, 80, 140, 90. And both numbers are important, top and bottom. So I'd give it a little bit longer. Now, obviously, if they're getting in the 200s over 100 or something off the charts, then I would check my machine first, then I would call my GP, but I would give this a little bit more time.
Yeah, okay. This listener is 43 with my family complete. I recently was referred by my GP for pelvic ultrasound for bleeding after sex and abnormal spotting on and off the progesterone pill for about 4 years. The ultrasound showed a small fibroid, an abnormally thick endometrium. I've been referred to a gynecologist. I don't have health insurance. I'm wondering though, is it concerning enough to go private for further investigation? There's long wait times in public gynecology clinics in my county.
Well, it's a really good question, and it's a difficult one to answer. In an ideal world, somebody who has something like this would be seen quite quickly and investigated, and this would be put to bed. Anybody who's having bleeding after intercourse or abnormal spotting, things like that, does need investigations, and they do need a sample. So endometrium there is the womb lining, basically. So they need a sample of that taken and sent to the laboratory. I suppose, as I said, ideally they'd get seen. I think if you've been referred publicly by your GP, then oftentimes the person who's in the hospital will read that referral and will decide on the level of urgency. And I would be hopeful that they wouldn't be waiting too long. They don't, they talk, I think, in the question about the general waiting list where they live, which I'm sure is valid, but people are referred to gynae clinics for all sorts of reasons. So this would be, I suppose, a more urgent one. So I think I'd wait and see when the appointment is. You should get acknowledgement of it fairly soon. Mm. And I mean, the consideration for going private, there would be costs associated. So it's hard to advise that person without knowing their circumstances.
Circumstances, okay. This texter, Niall, is 62, says they walk about 7 kilometres daily. They're wondering what could be causing their hip pain. It's just in my hip bone. And I'm wondering if the walking could be the result.
It certainly could be. Again, a few factors you'd want to know about that person. Say, are they overweight? Are they going up and down hills? Are they doing really intense walking? Two main things that we see cause, or three, cause hip pain. Number one is wear and tear, and that's diagnosed on an X-ray. That usually will cause pain that kind of goes down into the groin. Not in everyone, but in a lot of people. Other people get a condition called bursitis. So that's if you press on the hip, it's actually painful. And then as well as that, there can be muscular issues at play here. But I think the first investigation of choice there would be an X-ray, just to see. We don't just treat an X-ray, we treat a person. So if this person walks 7 kilometres every day, they sound like they're somebody who likes walking.
Yeah, fairly fit.
Yeah, they're in good shape. So we might have a 62-year-old who never walks, who has a lot of changes on their X-ray, and they're like, I'm fine, I don't want anything, and that's okay. And you might have someone who's 62 walking 7 kilometres a day, who's the minorest of wear and tears, but it's very bothersome to them. So we would send somebody like that for an opinion. So it, the patient's view there is very important
as
well.
Okay. This listener has a lump on her breast that has been diagnosed as a benign lymph node after a mammogram and an ultrasound last December. The lump is still there. I'm now wondering, should this lump have disappeared at this stage and if I should be worried about that?
Well, primarily a normal mammogram and on top of that, a normal ultrasound is very, very reassuring. And we're probably within about 4 months if that was done in December. Things like this can take time to settle down. In many cases, it would have disappeared by now, I would have thought, if it was an inflamed lymph node or a reactive lymph node. Lymph nodes get inflamed usually because of a localized infection or a systemic infection or something along those lines. It sounds like cancer has been outruled here, which is really, really good, obviously. Mm-hmm. I'd probably give it a little bit more time. And if the lump is persisting, it might be worth just going back to your GP to revisit that. But the investigations that the person has already undergone are quite reassuring.
Yeah, okay. This listener says, I'm a professional musician. I used to play and sing about 5 nights a week. Over the last 2 years, my voice has stopped working properly once I've gigged 2 nights in a row. I now can't hit the notes at all, the high notes at all. I've ended up cancelling most of my residencies and only doing 2 gigs a week. Losing my voice is affecting my livelihood. I'd appreciate any advice. I'm a non-smoker, don't drink. I'm 37 and a dad of 3. That's very distressing.
Yeah, it certainly is. So all sorts of things can cause this, really. So your vocal cords can get tired and can get strained. And if this is somebody who's singing 5 nights a week or hitherto had been, then it's probably something I would get investigated. Probably what this person doesn't want to hear is that a lot of the time when I see somebody or meet somebody in a situation like this, I'll try and advise them to take a complete rest, maybe for a week or a couple of weeks before they return, or kind of return on a phased basis. But if I have somebody like that and they're reliant on this as their profession and they're beginning to have difficulties completing that, I would usually send them to an ear, nose and throat specialist. Mm. And they'll often, now I don't want to second guess them because we're sending to a consultant for an opinion, but they'll often do a fibre optic exam where they'll have a look down and just to see, is there anything there? And people kind of nodules and things like that, which isn't necessarily a euphemism for cancer or anything, that need to be looked at and need to be treated.
Yeah. This listener is wondering, her husband has blood in his stool, has had it a few times now. Is it something we should be worried about?
It isn't always something you should be worried about, but it's definitely something you should get checked. It depends on the type of blood. If it's kind of darker blood, then it could be coming from higher up in the bowel. If it's very bright red, then it's more likely that it's coming from a bit lower down. But other things that are important would be, does this person have any family history of conditions? Say, have they ever had a colonoscopy before or an examination? Have they had any change in their bowel habit? Are they at an age where they would have done the bowel screen? Things like that. So you'd probably want to know a little bit more information, but I think depending on the person's age, sometimes men of that kind of vintage don't have too many reasons to visit their GP. So in the context, he might be someone who hasn't been in a while. So I probably would get an appointment about that.
Listener says their bloods recently, they had blood tests done. The results came back. One came back with liver dysfunction, too much iron in my blood. I now have to go back for more bloods to do with a liver and liver scan. I had them previously carried out about 6 months ago with elevated cholesterol. I do feel quite fine. Otherwise, I'm wondering, should I be concerned at all?
Yeah, so when you get your liver blood test done, they can be deranged or elevated for all sorts of reasons. Sometimes it could be a medication that we've given you. Sometimes it can be after an infection, or it could be that someone drinks too much. Some of us store a bit of fat around our liver as well, and that can cause the liver bloods to get to go off a bit as well. Now, did that person say that they had a lot of iron in their blood also?
Yeah, they did. Yeah, they're wondering, could it be, is it hemochromatosis?
Yeah, so hemochromatosis is very, very common, and it's excessive iron storage. So the body doesn't see that high level of iron in the blood, and it stores it in places that it shouldn't. And that doesn't cause any immediate or acute issue, but it can over a long period of time. So I'd imagine what's happening here is, first and foremost, they're repeating what's called the iron studies, which GPs can do. Mm. And they're probably going to do a genetic test for hemochromatosis as well, which we can also do. And many of us are carriers and we don't even realise it. So it's a very common Celtic condition.
Yeah. This texter says, I'm 47. I was diagnosed, is it with Behçet's disease, yeah, about 10 years ago. I've had many flare-ups. Right now, I'm having a really bad flare-up. I'm on a course of steroids. I don't get the TNF injections anymore due to constant chest infections, but I am in real pain. I'm wondering if you know anything my doctor could possibly prescribe to settle these stomach type flare-ups, other than over the counter.
So Behçet's disease is a quite a rare condition, actually, and it causes inflammation of blood vessels and mucous membranes and parts of the body like that. It's poorly understood. And so it sounds like this person was on kind of an immunotherapy that kind of dampens the immune system down. But one of the side effects of that, not only does it dampen the Behçet's, it can also dampen your response to other infections as well. So if they're having a lot of stomach problems on it, then there probably would be no harm for them to start something like a PPI. Now, you can get that over the counter. I think it's usually in lower doses, and you can only get it for shorter periods of time. So as a GP, you can prescribe a PPI for months at a time. That dampens down acid secretion in the stomach. So it sounds like this person is using other over-the-counter things. So it might be that they need a prescription medicine just to give this a bit more of a cover.
So trip back to the GP for this.
Potentially, yeah.
I started taking 5 mil blood pressure tablets recently. I'm also training for a marathon though, and I would have taken ibuprofen in the past, but I can't take that now with these tablets. Could you please recommend a substitute?
Well, if the person can't take ibuprofen, then we usually pivot to something paracetamol based. And we're not big fans of codeine and codeine based medicines. But if somebody can't take more basic anti-inflammatories, we'll often advise that they take something paracetamol by itself or with a little bit of codeine in it. Paracetamol isn't a glamorous painkiller, but I suppose the mistake we make is we don't explain to people maybe that they really do need to take it regularly. So most people say, well, that doesn't work. But if you only take it maybe once in the day or something like that, it may not work. So you usually need to take it a bit more regularly.
Okay, just finally, I get headaches and I have a history of migraines in my 20s. I'm now 45 and I'm back suffering again. I have a pain behind my eye, little darting pains in my head every now and again. Brain MRI was clear, pinched discs in my neck. Any thoughts?
Well, if they have a diagnosis of migraine already, then they probably do need to take something that, like a prophylaxis or a preventative, if it's debilitating them. And if they were diagnosed 20 odd years ago, then the medicines have definitely moved on since then. So if it depends how debilitating it is, a lot of people don't like the idea of a daily medicine, but it may be what this person needs if the migraines are debilitating and they'd rather something that prevents them rather than dealing with them when they happen.
And is that over-the-counter medication or something?
No, not really. It's most of the preventatives you would get on prescription only. I think some of them have been taken off license, but most of them are prescription only. And also avoid, as we spoke about in the last case, avoid anything with codeine because it might give instant relief, but then you can sometimes get a rebound headache from that, which can cloud the picture.
Okay. All right. Listen, Niall, thanks a million for popping into us to answer listener questions. Dr. Niall Breen there from the Portmarnock GP Clinic. Our email is lunchtimelive@newstalk.com.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan.
With insurancebroker.ie.
Weekdays at midday on Newstalk.